This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kuser. The long-awaited relaxing of COVID-19 health restrictions is near. This week, Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey announced that they will allow many businesses to fully reopen by mid-May. That means restaurants, retail stores, theaters, museums can all operate at full capacity. That's the first time in more than a year since the shutdown. But how have businesses in our region weathered the pandemic storm? We've invited Chris DiPantima, president and CEO of CBIA, Connecticut Business and Industry Association, to talk about that with us. And he joins us via Skype. Mr. DiPantima, hello, and thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me. An exciting time in Connecticut.
Yes, it is. And I'm wondering, looking backwards for just a moment, did you anticipate that the shutdown would last as long as it has?
Good question. I think me personally and many businesses have gone through a variety of emotions and thoughts. Back last spring, if I could rewind that far back, I was actually running businesses in the private sector here in Connecticut, as well as in France and in Washington and in California, Southern California. And I know, early in the spring it was, well, it's not here in the United States, it's mostly over in Asia Pacific and it won't be here. But then I actually was running a facility in Kirkland, Washington, where the first COVID US case happened. And it became very real for me. But I did not think it would last 13, 14 months. I will say that. I think we all thought it would reopen faster. Connecticut had our phase one reopening almost a year ago, last May, I believe May 20th. And I think we all thought better roads were ahead of us, but of course we had not only the fall spring back, the fall increase in numbers, but then again in the winter increase as well. So it's been longer than expected.
I'm wondering, generally speaking, you have a personal business experience as well as watching what's happening in a larger sense. How would you describe the impact the pandemic had on businesses in Connecticut over the past year?
It's been a wild swing of feedback from the business community. CBIA, we have nearly 5,000 members across the whole state of Connecticut in a variety of industries. So we get a really good sampling. And devastation by some businesses and in certain sectors. Other businesses, we're hearing record years in 2020 and 2021 looking like another record year. And then there's been the folks in the middle who it didn't affect as much, but it didn't in a negative way, but it obviously didn't end up being an incredible year for them from both a culture or a revenue point of view. So it's very interesting because, normally recessions hit or economic things happen that just go across the board and you don't see these mixed emotions of people having incredible record years and then people being completely devastated, not even able to have their workforce in place or run their businesses for 13 months like bars. And I think that's what we're seeing at a general level in Connecticut, too. We've got some incredible economic indicators that say, despite COVID, Connecticut has some really good things happen, and then we still have some negative economic indicators as well. So it's a weird variety of emotions and indicators.
What sectors enjoyed record years, positive record years?
Yeah, so a few. Believe it or not, some in the leisure and hospitality. In talking to the food industry and the restaurant association, there's some restaurants who were mostly already in the takeout sector that just exploded. Some, pizza places and other takeout establishments. And obviously everyone pivoted to takeout during COVID. So they were already in an interesting subsector of the leisure and hospitality space and did incredibly well. Defense manufacturing, there was a lot of federal dollars trying to, get into the economy. And one of the places was increased spending in our defense sector. So whether it was a submarine defense sector, which Connecticut is home to with Electric Boat and their full supply chain, or the aerospace defense sector, which Connecticut, again, strong home to with Lockheed down in the Bridgeport-Stratford area and Pratt & Whitney and up in East Hartford and Collins up in Windsor. So strong area there. Another area that maybe Connecticut didn't have as much attention on, but was the consumer manufacturing. So some areas that maybe are always competing with lower cost regions of the country or lower cost regions of the world, like manufacturers of cleaning wipes or rags, manufacturers of disinfectants. Obviously, with COVID, it was all about cleaning your house, cleaning your workplace, keeping it safe. And so those folks had record years as well, including the construction industry, the do-it-yourself. Stanley Black & Decker, headquartered here in Connecticut and New Britain. The do-it-yourself industry exploded with everyone being home and now doing home improvement projects. So those were some of the record areas.
And how about the other end of the scale? You mentioned, some hospitality sectors did do pretty well, others not so much. And tourism, too. Were they part of the hardest hit sectors when the pandemic took hold?
Still struggling. Yeah, some of those sectors that were devastated are still struggling. Tourism, the live theater, musical or arts production, I should say, hotel industry, which is kind of attached to both tourism, travel, obviously devastated. Hotels are kind of attached to travel. And in Connecticut, one of our strongest industry sectors is commercial aerospace. So the planes that we all fly on to go around the country to other states or around the world. Obviously, personal travel completely shuttered during COVID, but business travel as well still not happening. So those areas continue to struggle, and that's why at the federal level we've seen some specified grants towards restaurants, towards potentially hotels, towards travel, towards tourism, towards the arts, and I think we'll continue to see targeted federal money to try to revive them, because they're just not going to come back right away. Even with us reopening on May 19th in Connecticut, hotels are dependent on out-of-state visitors more so than in-state, obviously, whereas the restaurants, more in-state. You drive up the road, you go to your favorite restaurant, you drive 30 minutes, 40 minutes away, you go to your favorite restaurant. But in order to use a hotel, you're usually flying in from out-of-state. And so with folks still not traveling much on a personal basis, but certainly not traveling at all on a business basis, the hotel industry, the airline industry, the tourism industry, the commercial aerospace industry will certainly take a little while longer to recover.
How about businesses owned by people of color and women? How have they endured, and are they enjoying a recovery as we see an end to the pandemic?
They were hit the hardest. Black and brown community and women-owned businesses were absolutely hit the hardest. They were the ones who, specifically black and brown community, obviously were also hit the hardest from the health perspective. So there were real concerns about, going back into the office, having people come into business, because COVID was really devastating all people of all colors, but obviously it really hurt the black and brown community. And then from a women-owned business perspective, they were devastated because usually they are the caregivers of the house. So with schools being closed and childcare facilities being closed, a lot of women left actually the workforce altogether to go back home and care for their families. Also with home health care shutting down, women kind of went back home for the most part and helped with parent giving because we couldn't get people into the household to take care of some of the elderly. So we've seen a significant reduction in labor participation, and it's significant. It's mostly from women and minority community. So we're starting to see some rebounding, obviously, as the vaccination has rolled out very favorably in Connecticut, being the first state in the country to reach 50% complete vaccination. But this is also why the second round of federal funding was targeted towards minority-owned businesses, targeted towards women-owned businesses as much as possible to really help them rebound. And we're seeing some rebound in the minority-owned businesses, a little less so in the women-owned businesses. That's gonna require schools to be fully back in person and us to be fully reopened.
I'm speaking with Chris Diepenteam, the president and CEO of CBIA, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. Back in July, we spoke with CBIA's Eric Getty, and at the time he said that Connecticut was poised to come out of the pandemic fairly well compared to other states. Is that still the case, would you say?
Absolutely. We have, as I said, there's some tremendous economic indicators showing that Connecticut did very well, primarily because we did lead the country in addressing the health crisis. And so now we just need to make sure we have policies in place, programs in place through the use of these federal dollars that address the economic crisis that COVID has caused. And obviously not increasing taxes on residents and businesses is a start. We're seeing states around us like New York do massive tax increases, Massachusetts considering massive tax increases, and Connecticut's in a position where we actually don't need to increase taxes to balance our budget. We'll have a nearly $1 billion surplus this year between the general fund and the volatility cap. We have a record rainy day fund that we don't even need to tap into to balance the deficit in the out years. And we have $6 billion from the federal stimulus coming to Connecticut. So we're in a very good position while the states around us are actually making us more competitive by raising their taxes. And the governor called, he's been saying that he believes the economic bounce back will be like a cold spring that's really tightly, compressed and ready to just unleash itself as we fully reopen the state. And we would agree with that. As long as we continue to nurture the residents and businesses of Connecticut and not hit them with mandates and taxes, which unfortunately Connecticut has a history of doing, but hopefully we're changing the narrative and rewriting the Connecticut story. So yeah, it looks very positive.
As you mentioned before, and of course we all know that many people lost their jobs because of the shutdown during the pandemic. I'm wondering, will those people who are looking for work be able to find employment equal to the jobs they held before the pandemic, both in content, so to speak, and in salary and pay?
We believe so. It's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic that we talked to an economist last Friday during one of our events, as well as the CEO of Pitney Bowes down in your area, about. And there are businesses from both entry-level positions as well as high-skilled, high-pay positions looking for help, and they are unable to fill positions. At the same time, we still have high levels of unemployment in Connecticut. So why is it? Obviously, we've got federal stimulus dollars that makes it easier to be unemployed right now, or be on unemployment, I should say, from an economic point of view. But it's not just that. It's a lot of personal decisions going into, do I go apply for this job? Do I get back into the labor force? And I mentioned with women, it's about, okay, is my child being cared for? Are they in school? Is childcare open? The answers are probably no right now, and so we need schools to fully reopen. Can I get health care into my house or for my parents' house if I'm taking care of them? And there's other decisions. Some people want to continue to telecommute. They've really enjoyed that during COVID, and so they don't want to go back to a job where they have to go back in the office, either because they enjoy telecommuting or people are still concerned about their health. So they're looking for the right job, the job that fits them more personally, versus 10, 15, 20 years ago, we all would have, if we were unemployed, just taken the first job opportunity we had. And so I think, yeah, the jobs are there. We're seeing entry-level jobs offering $15 to $20 an hour now, when in the past they were, min wage. And these are amusement parks, restaurants. And then we're seeing high-skilled jobs in manufacturing, construction, that where they need welders, they need manufacturers. And those are, six-figure jobs that they're not able to fill either. So it's I think the jobs will be there. We just got to make sure the people are trained and willing to come back to the workforce.
Well, do you think that expectations, both from potential employees and businesses themselves, have expectations of work and business been transformed permanently because of COVID-19?
Absolutely. I think COVID-19 accelerated more of the work-life balance relative to telecommuting and working from home at least a few days a week, if not all the time. So that, while it may have happened 10, 15, 20 years from now, it certainly accelerated a lot of technology usages. I worked for a company, as I mentioned, when COVID descended upon us before joining CBIA in August, where we were big about being in front of the customer personally, or being big in front of our suppliers personally, in person. We've all now gotten used to Zooms and Skypes and different technology platforms where maybe we don't have to jump in the airplane so often. You still want that personal connection, that personal touch, no doubt about it, but maybe not as often. So I think it's transformed. We've also been hearing about, with the remote work, maybe some of the work comes back permanently, some of the work comes back a few days a week, and some of the workforce never comes back. And as a result, you've got maybe different workplace configurations, more what we call hoteling. Hoteling is when people don't have a dedicated cubicle or dedicated office space for themselves. There's kind of more of an open floor plan where you plug into a docking station with your laptop. You work that day, and the next time you come in, you may plug into a different docking station somewhere else around. So I think things have certainly changed permanently as a result of COVID.
Is it possible to describe what recovery actually looks like?
Well, for us at CBIA, yeah, we've defined it as being stronger and better than we were going into COVID. So heading into COVID, we still in Connecticut had not fully recovered from the 08-09 recession. We had not recovered all the jobs that had we had lost during that period of time. We were still about minus 1%. Personal income growth was lagging the national average. So in other words, there weren't career opportunities for individuals in Connecticut. They weren't getting the personal income growth through promotions or through being retrained and going into another profession, the high-paying jobs that you and I just talked about. The real estate market was very, very flat in Connecticut over the last decade. So we've been saying an economic recovery for us is being better and stronger than we were going into COVID, and at least being at the national average. But quite honestly, we should be leading New England. We've led New England and the nation in the health, addressing the health crisis. Why can't we once again in Connecticut lead the New England and the nation in economic recovery and economic drive? And we have a huge opportunity. As I said, there's a lot of optimistic and economic indicators. We just need to make sure we continue to leverage them. And there's a tremendous opportunity with these federal dollars. If we invest in the right way, we'll look back 5 or 10 years from now and say, wow, Connecticut really did the right thing. Just like in addressing the vaccine and the healthcare crisis, we did the right thing with our economic investments. If we don't invest correctly, we'll look back 5 to 10 years and say, well, another 10 years of no personal income growth, no real estate growth, no job creation in Connecticut. And that obviously would be very disappointing, but we think we have a huge opportunity in front of us to do it right.
Mr. Diepenthieme, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
It's been great to be on. Thanks for having me. Stay well.
You too. Chris Diepenthieme is the president and CEO of CBIA, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. As you just heard, businesses in Connecticut have taken a big hit during the pandemic. We've asked the district director of the U.S. Small Business Administration's Connecticut District Office to give us an idea of just how severe that hit has been for those smaller entrepreneurs and what's being done to help them recover. Catherine Marks joins us via Skype. Ms. Marks, hello, and thank you for taking time today.
It's a pleasure to be here with you and talk about the segment of our economy, our small businesses that are both, again, the engine of our economy and the fabric of our community. And we here at the Connecticut SBA are here to help them recover from COVID-19, which is a natural disaster.
And given what you just said about small business being the engine, what percentage of the state's economy is made up of small businesses?
I don't have that exact number. I do know that we have helped so many here in 2020 and 2021. Let me give you a few numbers here. Mm-hmm. In March 12 of 2020, a national disaster was declared, COVID-19, and almost immediately, the SBA, in conjunction with the Treasury, started the Paycheck Protection Program, commonly known as PPP. Mm. Here in Connecticut, just in Connecticut alone, in 2020, over 64,000 businesses received a PPP forgivable loan totaling $6.7 billion. And in 2021, with that reauthorization, over 50,000 businesses received another PPP forgivable loan totaling $3.1 billion. So there has been a significant need for these resources to help the small businesses sustain their businesses and indeed recover.
And of course, we see just on a daily basis driving down Main Street or along any thoroughfare, so many small businesses on both sides of the road. And clearly those numbers indicate the number of small businesses make up a large percentage of Connecticut's economy. I'm wondering, do you know what the condition was of the small business community in Connecticut prior to the shutdown? Were some still feeling the effects of the 2008 recession?
In terms of Connecticut, which is where I can speak of, mm-hmm. We were on the road to recovery. I think there's been many statistics, particularly out of some of the data centers from UConn, that we haven't yet recovered from the 2007-2008 financial crisis. but there have been reports such as the American Express Small Business Report that did show that there were unprecedented numbers of small businesses forming each and every day. While that did come to, you know, a halt here in 2020, we can see that the entrepreneurial spirit is always alive, but the numbers that I just stated, obviously from the federal relief that is needed, indicates, as you said, our Main Street businesses really do need our help. A particular segment is our restaurants and our food service industry, who in, you know, in 2020, nearly half of those who were employed in that segment of our population nationwide did lose their jobs, unfortunately.
There's a report from a Harvard University-based research institute, the Opportunity Insights Report, that stated as of April 21st of this year, and this reflects what you had mentioned earlier about essentially the emergency created in the business community by the pandemic. As of April 21st of this year, total small business revenue in Connecticut decreased by 32.8% compared to January of 2020. That's really a gut punch.
That is, and we see that every day talking to small businesses. And I don't have that report in front of me, but I would know that there are two segments that I know that includes. Number one, the small business restaurants, bars, inns, coffee shops. We know that during the shutter in place orders, you know, those revenues dropped significantly, if not 100%. But we've also seen from Bureau of Labor Statistics reports and Census Bureau reports that women-owned small businesses, particularly those where they're working out of the home and they had to pivot to 100% childcare, those did indeed see significant losses. And if you look at the Labor of Bureau statistics, you'll actually see a dramatic decrease in the labor force participation rate for women 16 and older. It's one of the most dramatic drops in the labor participation rate since the statistics have been available.
That report, the Harvard report, Harvard Connected report, also indicates that Connecticut lost about a third of its small businesses last year, I guess closing down. Your figures reflect that trend as well?
We don't see those exact numbers here, but what we do see is the need of the small businesses coming to us for federal relief, for help. The SBA has a number of programs that have been appropriated through Congress that we are administering, and each and every day we see the heartbreak and we see the need, and we roll up our sleeves and try to help these individuals as best they can, because I'm going to go back to my original statement. These small businesses are the fabric of our community. They support our little league. They employ people in our towns. They provide the services that make each of our communities so unique. So we are hoping for those, you know, that can make it, that we're providing that funding for them, and or the resources. That's such an important aspect of what we do.
I'm speaking with Catherine Marks, the district director of the SBA office in Connecticut. Maybe we could continue with your line of thought there, looking forward to the future, maybe mining some optimism, is if there is some, to get hold of. What do small businesses in Connecticut need right now? You began to talk about that in order to really get back up on their feet and head toward something akin to pre-pandemic normal.
Well, I don't, I think we all keep on saying every day we don't quite know what normal is going to be.
Mm, yeah.
So we just chart the course as best we have in front of it. I know businesses that have ramped up their brick to click, for no better terms, in hyperspeed in 2020. And the resources that we have come through SBA funded resource partners. And I don't want to use a four-letter word on your show, but I'm going to. These resource partners in Connecticut are free to our small businesses. I say that each and every day. They are the Connecticut Small Business Development Center, the Women's Business Development Council, SCORE Mentors, and the University of Hartford Entrepreneurial Center. These organizations will help a retail establishment get up their website, get their online sales going. They will help a restaurant pivot to takeout. They will help an entrepreneur get their financials in order so that when they are applying for our federal resources, their application is error-free. So I will encourage any small business listening that if you don't go through this alone. We want to see you survive and thrive in 2021, and we fund these resource partners. They're there for you free. You can find them at sba.gov.
So they can access all of this information that you've just shared with us through that website.
They can. They go on sba.gov, and they go to the Connecticut District Office, and we have a resource guide that indeed will show them exactly where to call. I'm on webinars almost every single day trying to promote these services, and I can tell you that our resource partners here in Connecticut, along with our wonderful chambers, have really rolled up their sleeves right along with us, because we don't want to see these businesses close. We want to be there and help them. The weather is getting warmer, we're getting vaccinated, and we see light at the end of the tunnel.
Have you heard from any Connecticut entrepreneurs, businesses, small businesses that are having problems bringing their workers or any workers back into the shop, so to speak? We've heard some reports from around the country where there are some problems. Businesses, they're up and ready to go again, but they just can't find the workers they need.
This morning, I was doing a webinar with the Connecticut Restaurant Association. We're talking about the new program, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund. And he did mention that they are having some challenges, but they're hoping to overcome those challenges. They have some, you know, new programs coming out to get the workers back into the industry. So I've heard of those problems, but I think those are hurdles that we can get over.
For the program today, we've also spoken with Chris DiPantima, the president and CEO of CBIA, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. And we asked him about businesses owned by women and people of color. And you've already touched on the impact that the pandemic's had on women-owned businesses. As far as those owned by people of color, the small business entrepreneurs in that community, what kind of impact have they felt, and are there efforts underway to help revitalize what they've lost?
Yes, and so many in our urban centers have lost a lot during this pandemic. You and I both have read, you know, various reports highlighting that. And the SBA, our Administrator Guzman, along with the Biden administration, is making very concerted efforts to prioritize some of our funding for women businesses, minority businesses, and veteran-owned businesses. So again, our program that just launched this week, our Restaurant Revitalization Fund, does indeed make all of those a priority, because we know that sometimes there is barriers of access to capital, along with the knowledge that the pandemic did hit some segments of our population harder than others.
You mentioned before that prior to the pandemic, you did see a trend of new businesses attempting to get up and running, and then that abruptly stopped. I'm wondering, as we do approach what appears to be sort of the end of this COVID-19 situation, are you being contacted by any entrepreneurs who do want to start a new business?
Each and every day. The spirit, the passion for someone to say, I want to start a new business, that never dies. And even in the pandemic, we saw some people out of necessity, some people had lost their jobs, and out of necessity, they had to try to take a hobby and pivot that into a way to bring income into their households. So each and every day we see that, but I think we all know that, 2019 and the beginning of 2020, the numbers were extraordinary. I hope we get back to that point. We do still see that. And in fact, I'm amazed, when I get invited to openings of restaurants. We have restaurants that opened during the pandemic, that their plans were there and their spirit was there. And I just visited one this past week in Torrington with Senator Blumenthal, and it is thriving. So the entrepreneur spirit doesn't die. That's what we're here to help. So we have a lot on our plate, but we couldn't be happier with our mission. And we see warmer weather and positive things for our future for the Connecticut small businesses.
And one more time before we finish up, could you again share the website where small business owners can go to get more information about either starting a business or keeping one afloat?
Yes. At the Connecticut SBA, you can go to sba.gov, go to the Connecticut office. You can learn about our terrific resource partners, the chambers throughout Connecticut. You can get information about our lending programs and our federal relief programs, all from PPP loans to the Restaurant Revitalization Fund to the EIDL Economic Injury Disaster Loans. So sba.gov. And of course, you can always follow us on Twitter at @SBA_Connecticut.
Ms. Marks, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Catherine Marks is the District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration Connecticut District Office, and she joined us via Skype. As you've heard here on The Full Story today, small businesses provide much of the horsepower that drives our regional economy, and they were hurt the most by the pandemic shutdown. But many have weathered the COVID-19 storm. iTeach, a Connecticut-based company, is one of them. iTeach founder Shardae Nicholson joins me now on Skype. Ms. Nicholson, hello and welcome to The Full Story.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Certainly. First of all, congratulations on staying strong over the past year.
Yes.
I think we need to know what iTeach does before we can understand how your business survived COVID-19. I guess in a nutshell, iTeach helps kids learn, right?
Yes, and iTeach is a tutoring and school support company. We help students with, the difficulties that they have when they're learning, and also with advocating, helping the parents understand things from what their children and how they learn, sitting in on PPTs, so an avenue of things.
And you were in business prior to the pandemic, correct?
Yes. We established in 2019 of February. Yep.
That was pretty timely. I'd like to ask you something more about life during the pandemic as far as your business goes. But I'm wondering what went through your mind when really not terribly long after you began your business, Governor Lamont announced the statewide shutdown in Connecticut, which was in March of last year.
Yeah, it was very shocking to say the least. Didn't quite know how we were going to pivot. quickly had to adjust, and it was scary. But I can say the adjustment, even though we had to move quickly, we did well. We did do well.
And to keep the business up and running for really for now, how challenging has it been for you to get that done as a small business owner?
Well, I would have to say that the pandemic helped this small business. And it sounds crazy, but it did, because it opened up not just to the Connecticut area, but we were also able to branch out. And so now we have students all over the world. And simply because everything has become virtual. And so being able to pivot during this pandemic very much benefited us and helped us. It kind of like gave us a push in a sense. Yeah.
What brought students to your door, to your virtual door during the pandemic? Was it word of mouth, smart marketing, something else?
I would say that it was a combination of all of that. I do a lot of Instagram, a lot of emails, a lot of word of mouth, and also people just kind of reaching to others that may have been with me before. Like prior to this, I was contracted with a local we're out of the Middletown, Connecticut area. So I was with a local camp. And so with that camp, once the pandemic hit, it was like, oh, I remember I teach. I need my student to, I need my son, my daughter to get back into it, especially now during the pandemic. So I would say it was a combination of things.
Were you able to keep your staff employed during the whole pandemic? Well, I guess it's still underway, but
a one-man show as of right now. Can you believe that? One-man show. So as of right now, it's just me, but eventually, soon, like coming soon, I'm looking for two more people to help with the tutoring portion.
Are you expanding? Has the pandemic led to an expansion? You mentioned that you've got students around the world. Is your business expanding?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So that's why it's time for me, I teach to hire now, because I can't do it all,
I guess it's fair to say, I mean, it sounds like the pandemic to some extent changed how you run your business.
Yes, absolutely. And, it actually really, it taught me something that, virtual, although a lot of people, it took some getting used to, but it is just as effective as in person. You just have to know how to work it. You have to know how to get your students engaged, and it is just as effective as in person.
We've spoken with teachers and students and educators at various levels of the systems around the region. And some say, yes, the virtual worked pretty well. Others say it depended on the student. There were some who just could not adapt to it. Others who just took to it like a duck to water kind of a thing. I know one particular family where it was split right down the middle. One was sobbing under the table while the other one was having just a great time. So I guess the virtual thing is not good for everybody, but you think there's a way that that can be improved upon?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I believe it's, I do virtual and I do in person. And like you had mentioned, there are, it's kind of split down the middle, but I believe in like really getting to know your student and getting to know how much he or she can handle. That has a lot to do with it. Many, many breaks, putting games into the virtual scene, like you have to become very creative. So it's all in how you work and all in how you engage the student.
I'm speaking with Shardae Nicholson, the founder of the company iTeach, based in Connecticut.
Yes.
Were there business lessons that you learned over the past year during the pandemic?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. You know, as I mentioned before, I'm kind of a one-woman show as of right now. So I am doing the tutoring and the bookkeeping and the marketing, and I have children of my own. So it's like, okay, at some point, you're going to have to outsource this stuff. You're going to have to kind of let go of your grip if you want your business to, you know, flourish as you, you know, dreamed of. So that is definitely have taught me, like, I can't do this all on my own. So as of right now, I'm in the middle of preparing to hire two more tutors, and also getting into a space where I'm outsourcing marketing and different things like that. So I would say that has been my biggest business lesson.
Businesses run by women and people of color were particularly affected by the shutdown. As a Black woman yourself, was your experience through the pandemic different, do you think, compared to other business owners?
Yes, I definitely think it was different. Like I said, you know, the pandemic was a push for me. I, starting out in this business established in 2019, I was also working a full-time job and doing the business at the same time. At the start of the pandemic, I had to go on unemployment. And when my previous job had called me back, I had to tell them that I cannot come back because my business started just going. And I couldn't do both. And so it was truly, it was a blessing in disguise for me.
Generally speaking, and we're really still in the midst of the pandemic, although people talk about seeing the light at the end of the tunnel at this point, do you think that, generally speaking, small businesses are getting the help they need to recover from the federal government, from state government, from other organizations? Perhaps you were able to hook up with others who were able to offer advice and whatnot during the pandemic?
Yes, I would say that the government, this is just me speaking from my point of view, mm-hmm. I think they helped very much so with, there was a loan in the beginning that they gave that was, you know, you didn't have to explain a lot. It was free money, $1,000. And that just helped me, you know, really settle the applications that I use for my students online, and really gave me good cushion to plummet the business and to really get it to where it needed to be as the students were like drawing in. I believe that the government, this is me just speaking for myself, I truly believe the government is helping. And as long as you're, you know, filling out those applications, getting all those loans, like I truly believe that they're helping us during this time. Absolutely.
Well, Ms. Nicholson, we certainly wish you the best of luck in the future, and thanks for joining us today and sharing your business story with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Shardae Nicholson is the founder of iTeach.
Last July, we spoke with Dr. Martin Kantzor, the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy, to find out what the pandemic was doing to businesses on Long Island. And he is with us again on the phone right now. Dr. Kantor, welcome back to The Full Story.
I'm happy to be here.
When we spoke last year in the depths of the pandemic, you described the business climate on Long Island as fragile. Well, here we are about 9 months later, yet to exit completely the era of COVID-19. Is that still true? Is the business climate still fragile?
It's better than fragile. It's improving. It's improving, but we've got a ways to go.
You also said when we spoke before that if 15,000 businesses closed down due to the pandemic, it wouldn't surprise you. I'm wondering, do you know at this point, 9 months later, how many businesses have shut their doors for good on Long Island?
Well, we don't have real hard data. I mean, we have anecdotal data.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know, the Federal Reserve has said that 30% of the businesses that close won't open. New Jersey did a study and really matched that 30% number. The 30% of the businesses won't open up. So 30% of businesses on Long Island will be 30,000 businesses. That's way too large. But I still think we're going to have somewhere between 10,000 and 15,000 small businesses that will have succumbed to the pandemic.
I was going to ask you, in terms of size, what category do most of those businesses fit into? And it is the small business entrepreneur that's getting the gut punch here.
That's correct. Large businesses who have had access to capital, access to lending, had more reserves saved in cash on hand to help them through the tough times. We're talking about small businesses which have 10 or fewer employees. Excuse me, and I'll venture to say that we're probably looking at businesses that have 5 or fewer employees, which is really your very small entrepreneur business. Those are the ones that are going to be suffering, and those are the ones who lack capital, lack reserves, lack savings, have already spent the reserves in the first 6 months, because I've always advised my clients that you should keep 6 months' worth of operating expenses in reserve. And here we are in a pandemic that's already almost 14 months. So those 6 months' worth of reserves are gone. Depending if these folks were eligible for the PPP loans, then if they weren't, then they're going to be out of business, unfortunately.
And are businesses still finding they have to shut their doors, even if they hung on for 14 months? Are there still businesses shutting down?
If you've made it through 14 months, and that means you probably got some of the federal support, the PPP loans, now coming in line. New York State has an $800 million loan fund, which it's trying to get online and money out the doors. We're getting restaurants now with the federal restaurant fund, and you got the shuttered venues grants that are out there. So if you've made it this far, And you're accessing the federal money, you're going to make it.
So that's, I guess that you could say that's a bit of good news, then, at least some light at the end of the tunnel, as they say. You mentioned restaurants and entertainment venues. Which sectors saw the greatest losses or are seeing the greatest losses at this point, do you think?
Well, it's the service sector. If you had to show up to work in the hospitality sector, tourism, the hotels and things like that, then they're closing down and you've probably lost your job. Remember, on Long Island, we still have about 80,000 jobs which have disappeared and haven't come back yet.
So in the vein of good news, if we could stick with that, do you anticipate things will begin to pick up as we head into the summer?
Well, here's the proviso. People have to feel comfortable to get out. I was out and about last weekend. It was a nice sunny weekend. We went to a petting zoo. The place was packed with young families. Everybody was social distancing, and everybody was wearing their masks, even though the CDC said if you're outside and you can maintain 6 feet of social distancing, you don't need a mask. So with that, I'm not being critical to people wearing it. I'm just making an observation that if people actually 70%, I think, of Nassau County had at least one vaccine. So when you're having a widespread vaccinations and the COVID rate going down, and people are still not trusting the data and they're being cautious, that caution could hurt the opening of the tourism and entertainment sector coming back robustly. But I do believe that the entertainment and tourism sector will come back. The other point is to make is that even in the sporting events, the Yankees, the Mets, the entertainment venues, they're still having 33% occupancy on the attendance. So until we really open up fully and people start trusting the vaccines and want to get out there, then it's going to be slower than what should be optimum recovery.
I had heard that with the Yankees and the Mets, there was a plan that was either put in place or it's being proposed that if you have a vaccination and you show up for the game, you get to go in the quote-unquote normal section where people can sit next to each other like the old days. And if you don't, you go into the 6-foot social distancing section. Again, Yankees and Mets. I don't know if you had heard anything about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people have a right to get the vaccine if they want and not get it if they want. but it's almost like if they're going to isolate the people who didn't take the vaccines, it's like the old schoolroom where you admit did something wrong, you have to sit in the corner with a dunce hat on. You know, those who didn't take the vaccines are going to be segregated in a special section. Who knows if that's going to be the bleachers or the best seats? You know, but that's got to be the if you don't want to take the vaccine, you can't put other people in danger of coming down with the virus. So yeah, I've heard that. And what will be the policy when the entertainment venues open up? What about Broadway? You know, how are you going to deal with filling the theaters? You know, and so it remains to be seen how this thing shakes out.
We had seen and heard reports from around the country in various places where businesses, small businesses specifically, were having trouble actually bringing workers back into the shop, so to speak, bringing workers back into the business. They were ready to open up, but they just didn't have the help they needed to get up and running. Have you seen any of those kinds of situations on Long Island?
Well, it's happening, yes. You know, there are people who are out of work, who are filing for, you know, unemployment. There are businesses that are opening up. But you know, here's the economic conundrum. You know, you're providing a unemployment insurance benefit on top of the $300 the federal government gives you. So these folks, if they're earning minimum wage in their jobs, you're getting more on unemployment than you would if you went back to work. And so that's actually an economic theory that if you pay people for idle time, they're going to take that idle time. And so we're seeing that's hurting businesses that need to open up, like agriculture and the tourism industry. The other thing that's hurting is the visas to allow students from Europe, which really work the hotels and the restaurants during the summer months, you know, to earn some money and then go back. Those visas and those travel, there are travel restrictions and visa restrictions for these folks. So that's exacerbating the lack of labor to help these businesses open up. They'll open up, but they're not going to waste the time not to open up. But they'll open up, but it's going to be hard finding labor for those two reasons.
Going back to the first reason, does that situation put more pressure on businesses to raise the wages that they're willing to pay?
The quick answer would be yes. However, remember something, that businesses now, you know, are testing the waters to open up. I'm seeing the Consumer Price Index has shown the prices of consumer goods have gone up when there has not been an appreciable increase in demand. So that means businesses are opening up to and charging more money for their goods and services to make up for what they lost during the pandemic. It seems to me unlikely that they're going to start increasing wages to hire workers back when most businesses who've struggled through the pandemic are in a weakened financial state. And that's doubtful. I think they want to use their extra revenues to shore up their business finances. But we'll see. I think that in New York in particular, when the unemployment insurance runs out in, I think it's in September, then we're going to see folks coming back to the workforce and businesses hiring them.
Are you sensing any more optimism from the business community right now compared to, say, back in July when we last spoke?
I don't think there's any optimism. I think there's a realism. You know, you can't be optimistic when people are talking about a second wave of mutants of the virus, or you know, or people are being reluctant to get the shots. I think businesses are just taking a deep breath that the summer months are here, and people are, at least on Long Island, are coming out. I think that it's more of a relief than optimism. You know, I think, you know, you wait till after the summer and then you can talk about optimism.
Dr. Cantor, thanks so much for your insights about the situation with the business community on Long Island. We appreciate it.
Well, happy to help you.
Dr. Martin Cantor is the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. Are you a business owner?
thinking maybe of starting one? Tell us all about it. Send us an email at tfs@wshu.org. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at FullStoryWSHU. And that's our program for today, produced by Fatou Sangare and senior producer Ann Lopez. I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to The Full Story.